This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, any place, make snack time playtime with Funnables fruit snacks. Have fun, eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Ow! Those uncomfortable things we do for beauty.
Oof, ouch.
And when it comes to whiter teeth, same story. Until now. Enjoy rinse-free whitening with new Sensodyne Clinical White. You'll get clinically proven whitening technology in an enamel-safe formula for two shades whiter teeth and 24/7 sensitivity protection. Sensodyne Clinical White, a whiter smile without the rinse.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast, the home of all your Rainbow Cup news, of course. There'll be loads of reaction to the Rainbow Cup coming up. Specifically, over the next hour or so, I'll be spending 58 minutes talking about the Dragons' victory over the Scarlets, and there might even be 2 minutes to talk about the Lions. Joining me to do that, of course, is your regular lineup these days. We've got Dan Killick with us. How are you, Dan?
I'm very good, thanks, Jed. Can't grumble at all.
And we got the mighty Murph. Oh, you, Murph.
Hello.
Niceties, small talk, done. Despite what I just said there, I reckon what we're going to do is let's do a review of the Welsh regions in action in the first half of the show, and then we'll go on and we'll have a look at the Lions in the second half of the show, because obviously there's been some big Premiership games this weekend. There's been some injury news, both good and bad, with regards to potential Lions. There's plenty of Lions chat for us to talk about. But first, if you want to get through that, we've got to talk about the Rainbow Cup. Dan, I know you've been mega excited about this one. Did it live up to expectation, opening weekend of the Rainbow Cup? In the week that it began, it changed format once again.
Yeah, it's... I suppose it's a bit of a farce, isn't it? But there's definitely some entertaining rugby on display, wasn't there?
Yeah, bucket loads of tries.
Yeah, a lot of tries, you know, but it's definitely got a Mickey Mouse feel to it, isn't it, with the games as well. There was a lot of poor rugby in there as well, wasn't there? You know, we got to be honest about it. It wasn't fantastic, but I suppose it was always going to be what it is, isn't it?
Well, it is really, because like now it's, imagine the Pro 14 or the Pro 12, but without any need to qualify for Europe. It's basically is kind of what you're staring at, isn't it? Which is, it means there's not the intensity there. And I think obviously you saw that the minute that the Welsh sides announced their starting lineups for the weekend. You know, I mean, obviously Cardiff put out a massively experimental side. Ospreys was, you know, fairly, it was a very strong side, if not their first choice. Dragons went fairly strong, but with quite a few youngsters in there, and Scarlets went a bit experimental as well. But yeah, what did you make of it, Murph? What was your thoughts of the weekend as a whole?
Well, that Cardiff side, it was almost like an end of season. We're looking at who's going to get a contract again.
Yeah.
Type of side. I mean, I know obviously contracts are negotiated long before you get to the end of the season, but it had a look of a side. Well, you know, they left out loads of first choice players, Willis and all sorts of people, Thomas and everyone, Jared was not there. And, And then so they're having a look at everyone else. And it was like as if, well, to me, it was a go out and play and we'll see if you're going to be still retained at the club in future kind of thing. But that is, I mean, and like you say, not everyone, most of the sides didn't go full strength. Cardiff are really second string. I mean, there was some debuts at that level as well, given off the bench and whatever. But the big story is Shaw's North, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's...
it's depressing.
I mean, I don't think there's been any update, any proper update today, because presumably they're waiting on a scan, but it looked like a season ender, didn't it?
I mean, every time someone's on the floor clutching their knee in agony. Yeah. I mean, in fairness, well, as a bit of a disprover of my point, Dan Bigger did that yesterday and then carried on playing. But that was more of a coming together of knees than a, you know. I don't know if you've ever done it when you whack your knee on someone else's knee. Hmm. It's one of the sharpest pains you can have. But there was no impact on George at all. It was just his knee just buckled as he was changing direction. And then he was on the floor writhing in agony. The only vaguely upside of it was he wasn't stretchered.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And you just, I don't know, it's the fact that you heard him scream and then he hit the deck and grabbed his knee straight away. You're right, all the signs there are that it's a really bad injury. And I mean,
it just screams 9 months when they do that, don't it?
Horribly, it does, doesn't it? And you think back to, I mean, God, you think back to Anscombe busting his knee at Twickenham and then trying to play on. And,
yeah.
You know, and that's... it's nearly 2 years since that happened and we've got no idea when he's going to play again. It's just one of those things, the knee, that is so concerning when you see that. And yeah, you do feel like it's going to cost him his Lions summer.
Well, I mean, even if it's not as bad as feared and he's not, you know, like a 9 month recovery situation, it's still going to be severe enough, I'd say, to keep him out for a couple of months, which means they're not going to select him if he's coming back to fitness late June or whatever. There's no point in having him on the Lions tour in July. So, I'm sick for him. I mean, hope there's some kind of mistake being made and he's just, you know, a slight sprain or something. I don't know. But it looks really negative, should we say.
It does. I mean, obviously, we'll be having a look in the second half of the show at options and what that might mean, who the next cab off the rank, so to speak, is. And we'll do that in the second half of the show. Just to bring it back to that game, though, let's go to you on this one, Dan. Did we learn much out of that game? Particularly, I know exactly what Murph's saying about it having like a players, you know, squad players playing for a contract type thing. Did you glean any bit of insight out of that game?
Not really, Jed, to be honest. I thought it was pretty poor quality, really. There was a lot of a lot of aimless kicking. I know why, obviously. We all know why the kicking is important, but there was just no intensity to the game, really, was there at all. It had a training ground feel about it. The Ospreys were comfortable all the way through, really. It's very, very easy for them. But I think really when you had a look at the lineups and the squads, you kind of felt that, didn't you, before the kickoff happened. What did we learn? I'm
going to be optimistic on this, Dan, because you know that's not normally my thing, but I must be in a buoyed by the fact that the Dragons have had a victory this weekend. And I know you always like to look for standout performers, particularly kind of young talent coming through and stuff like that. There must have been a few people who kind of caught your eye on either side.
Yeah, I thought Prothero played very, very well. He's a slip of a bloke, isn't he? But extremely sort of dynamic, quick, can change direction on a sixpence, and he cuts great angles. I thought he was outstanding and. He's playing really well. He's had a great season, isn't he? So he went well. I thought in the front row, I thought the young hooker,
Ivan Phillips,
yeah, played well. He's his throwing in went well. He's all round the park, all action. Just offers something a little bit different, doesn't he, to the twos that we've got. I like him.
He's really, really quick as well. I think he's got a kind of explosive pace. He carries well. He he's good over the ball, and his nuts and bolts looks good. I mean, for me, I think, yeah, you know, like we say, if there is a development game over the summer, I'd like to see him involved in that Wales squad. And, you know, I think his where he is at the moment, obviously, I know everyone's kind of very excited about Lake, but I do get the fear. Well, no, I based on what we've seen so far, he is further along. I mean, obviously, he's a bit older. I think he's about 24, Phillips. But I think that he's got a bit of X factor about him. I'd like to see him get a decent run with Wales, really.
Yeah, I do as well. I know, yeah, like you said, a lot of the talk is about Derry Lake, but, you know, obviously the throw-in is so important, and he has. So, yeah, I would put even Phillips ahead of him, and he's all action. Yeah, just so great, you know, good game from him. I think on the Cardiff side of things, I thought Tuvey struggled in that game in quite a big way. And when the switch came over and Ben Thomas went into 10, there was a lot more happening.
Was it a missed opportunity to play Ben Thomas at 10? Or is it more likely that next season we're going to see Ben Thomas possibly, you know, as a second playmaker, either at 12 or at 15 because of Priestland and Evans? What do you think? Was that a bit of a missed opportunity?
I think potentially, yeah. I mean, it's Cardiff know he's not going to play 10, don't they? So they're obviously keeping him in the centre berth, yeah, to try and get him, I suppose, reading as a playmaker. But in a game like that, I just think that, you know, he knows the 12 role. There's going to be some changes at 10 anyway, so why not have him at 10? And you could just see the centres, the wingers, I'd say even the forwards as well, started reading the game very differently when he was there. So I felt like that was quite disappointing, really. I would have been a lot more excited than if he was in that starting 10 slot.
What about you, Murph? Anyone stand out on either side for you?
I thought a couple of the selections were interesting on the Cardiff team at first.
Everyone was out of position, weren't they? I mean, like,
well, I'm just going to say Owen Lane at 13 because he thinks he's a 13. He thinks he's a centre, and he's been on the wing for two seasons.
Yeah, three.
And with the way things have moved along now with Jonathan Davis, maybe not, I want to say past it, but, you know, coming to the end of his career, should we say, there's like a shortage of pace at 13 across the country. So, yeah, it could be an opportune moment for Owen Lane if it works out to play at 13. I think it might have been where I didn't pay attention properly, but it might have been where the whole 15 was homegrown. I can't think of any imports there. Anyway, so outside, I thought Ben Thomas at 15 was interesting as well because he's got that kicking game and everything. And then obviously at 15, he can move up to first receiver on occasion. So I don't know what their plans are for him, to be honest, because they've got Reece Priestland arriving next year. And Jared obviously is just extended. The other one that stuck out for me, because he outplayed his opposite numbers quite so much, was the Ospreys line. Was it Aubrey?
Aubrey, yeah.
I haven't noticed him much before, but I thought he was really good yesterday.
I thought he had an excellent game. I think that, again, they got a little a cluster of good young nines down there, haven't they, with him and Morgan Williams and Harry Morgan, is it?
And then Venter is the old guy.
Venter is the old guy, and obviously Webb knocking around as well.
Yeah, Reece Webb. I don't know how far away he is, do you?
Well, from fitness, I don't think he could be far off. But it's some good options there. I thought again the pack went
loads of depth well. If you think about it, all in one club, a lion and three really good prospects aside from Brenter, obviously.
Yeah.
Those, just on the subject of when someone's going to be fit, I suppose the whole world now is looking at when Manu Tuilagi is going to be fit.
Murph, you're going to have to wait for the second half, man. I don't know how many times I've got to say it.
Well, it's on the same subject as George North getting injured. So
it is.
I could drop that in.
We'll definitely get onto it in the second half, 100%. Let's have a look at the Dragons game now. And am I right in thinking you fellas haven't caught up with this one yet?
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Questions over to you then, I guess. Dan, you seem to really enjoy being in the question master seat the other week. Why don't you have a stab?
I did enjoy that. Yeah, I get my hat back on now. Jed, what did you make of that game?
Exactly the same as the Ospreys game in terms of intensity. I think that it's a mixture. Someone mentioned it in the commentary as well. It has a real pre-season feel to it. It's like the games that we had. Do you remember when after lockdown and the Pro 14 came back? Did it come back? But do you remember those derbies we had at the in August last year? I can't remember which bloody season it was attached to now, but it feels like that. You know, it's kind of like it's some games to fulfil a contractual obligation, and it doesn't have the intensity of your usual derby match. But that said, you know, there's some nice stuff in there from the Dragons. Scarlet's defence is worrying, and you know, when we're talking actually about. You know, John Fox again. He played at 12, and he looked a shadow of his former self. And you know, again, I'm hoping that's just ring rustiness, and you know, he's gonna get back, because he was admittedly he was a bit exposed for Jonah Holmes' first try, but Holmes absolutely gassed and skinned him around the outside. You know, took his try really well. So there's you know, Scarlets have been hammered points wise in their last three games. You know, Connor, Sale, and the Dragons, and that's not a particularly encouraging signs for them.
Now, was it individual? Was it individual errors, or was it systems?
I get the feeling that again, you got a lot of untried combinations in there today. So you had a lot of players playing who perhaps haven't played together on that many occasions. You know, you had Blacker at 9, you had Costello at 10. John Fox at 12. You had Tom Rogers on one wing. I can't remember who the 13 was now. You kind of get the feeling that had something to do with it. But if it's three games on the spin, you know, this game might be a pre-season game, but the one against Sale certainly wasn't. And that looked like systems failure from what I saw. You got your hand up there, Murph.
No, I'm sorry. No, I was adjusting my laptop forward, and it looked like I was reaching out. I was just going to say that they all feel these games feel a lot like pre-season games, because in this part of the world, I don't know them or you, but there's been hardly any rainfall in April.
Yeah, so
the pitches are rock hard. The backs, you know, having to fill in their boots, and all the forwards have probably got blisters everywhere. They don't want to switch to short studs in case it affects their scrummaging. So it feels very much like that kind of a. I mean, I suppose you could say end of the season, because it is April, nearly May, and normally the season be finished early May. But it just favours the attacking, you know, type of rugby we're seeing, not just in this neck of the woods, but over the border as well. So
I think the encouraging thing, just to kind of touch on the Dragons and wrap up this game. We are, you know, I've said a number of times, you know, how there's a real crop of talented kids at the Dragons, but they need to kind of, you know, they need to step up. And, you know, the players who've been there in the first team for a few years have got to be able to kind of help them step up and get over the line. And I think we're kind of getting to that stage now. And again, Owen had a really exciting game in the centres. I think he's performing really well. Jonah Holmes has been a complete revelation, and I think I said to you, Dan, and I might even said it on air, but I don't think I realised quite how good a player he was. You know, I didn't watch him that much at Leicester, and he is a real attacking threat. You know, Rio Dyer, like Murph saying, this was a game for Rio Dyer. Defences opening up, you know, loads of ball in play time. Pitch as hard as you'd get in the, you know, in the Highveld in South Africa. It was a real game for Rio Dyer, and he showed what we know he's capable of. And that's just, you know, he's an absolutely lethal athlete, and showed some nice touches with it. So there's lots to like about it, but I think the really encouraging thing was Moriarty and Wainwright just both had stormers. Moriarty carried hard as you like, smashing through people, making yards all the time. Wainwright was there in support. They linked up really well. The hands were good between the two of them. So, yeah, some good progress. And they got over the line in the game as well. So, actually, you know, if you look at the Dragons last eight games, there's a fair few wins in there. So yeah, I think there's lots to be encouraged by during that game, even if it is a bit of a pre-season game.
Would you be concerned if you were a Scarlets fan? Because there's a lot of talk online, isn't there?
I think there always is, though, because I think the expectation is always more out west, isn't it? You know, they've been the most successful professional side in the last, however many years, 5-6 years, and they have a higher budget than anyone else. They've got a very good squad. They've got a lot of talented youngsters. They're not firing as they need to be. And, I suppose the question is, obviously with Dwayne Peel coming in, is he going to be able, you know, are they going to be able to make that switch off the pitch so that it makes a real impact on it? I think there's definitely cause for concerns, less so this game, but certainly, you know, the Connacht and Sale fixtures are ones to be very worried by. And then if you mess around with your starting lineup a bit, you're opening yourself up to losing this game. So, yeah, there's plenty for them to think about.
A last question for you. Outside of the backs, how did the packs go, just, you know, scrummaging wise?
It was very, very windy at Rodney today. And I think it was like watching the line out. It was a bit like watching the line out from the 70s. You know, where you get the ball to get bobbed up and then there's people going for the second ball as it's up in the air, as if it's a beach ball type thing. That was quite enjoyable. Scrum went pretty
Rob
well.
Evans was back, wasn't he?
He was, again, you know, it's probably not a fixture that will necessarily live long in the memory for him. I don't know, how did both packs go? I mean, you know, I think Dragons had the better of the set piece, I would say. But again, there was quite a few lineouts lost because of the wind. There wasn't that much scrummaging, but when there was, Drags did all right with a fairly inexperienced front row as well. So yeah, lots to like about it from a Dragons perspective. Lots of thinking to do from a Scarlets one. All right, last point on the Rainbow Cup before we go for a break, or the Rainbow Trout Cup, as my wife has been calling it. So we've seen the introduction of some experimental law variations. I'll just refresh your memory of them because I don't think we saw too many of them. There's the dropout instead of a 5-meter scrum. So there's a dropout from your line, kind of rugby league style. We didn't get to see one of those in either of the Welsh games. There's the red card replacement rule. So you can bring on a replacement player after 20 minutes if someone gets red carded. And there's the captain's challenge. What do you guys think about these law variations? Let's throw to you on this, Murph.
I like the captain's challenge.
Do you?
Yeah, it's been used in Super Rugby in New Zealand, I can't pronounce what they're calling it actually, but
Aotearoa, I think it is.
Yeah, I like it. There's been a few occasions where in international games where I wish the Welsh captain could do the T sign to the ref and say, "Come on, have a look at that, please." Normally, when Alwyn Jones is getting forearm smashed on the floor, I'd like him to get up and go, "Ref, can you just check what happened to my face?" But I've said before, he doesn't, when he's getting knocked about, he doesn't seem to make anyone aware of it. He just carries on. I like that rule. I don't know about the dropout. I think they're just trying to avoid scrums, aren't they?
That's the one I like, actually. I just think there's enough scrums go on everywhere on the pitch. If you hold someone up over the line, I feel like a goal line dropout is probably quite a good way of restarting the game, isn't it?
Well, like I say, they're just trying to avoid scrums. Mm. I mean, I think it'd be in winter when you're having a game that's dominated by scrums, I think then it would be an idea, what was the other rule?
The other one is this red card replacement thing.
I mean, I think it's a reaction to the fact that there are so many reds in this era because of the way they've changed, you know, tackling rules. And we've just come through a phase of red cards for challenging in the air. That's kind of, players have got that now. It doesn't happen all the time. The pennies dropped on that one, but we're still getting high tackles. Obviously, we've seen it in the Six Nations and still dominating matches around all over the place. So, yeah, when we go through this period of adapting, players getting their tackles lower and not smashing each other in the face anymore, I don't think, like, red cards after that point are going to be for just out and out foul play.
Yeah.
you know, so then I don't think they and they'll become less regular. The red cards will be less regular. So I don't think we should keep it permanently where you can lose a player for 20 minutes and then bring, you know, you can bring on a sub on. I think a red card is what, you know, is what it means. You're going to play with 14 men for the rest of the game. And that's what happens if you commit foul play. I could see the argument to having it for, say, two yellows. So if you're two yellows, you go down to 14 men. You can see that you maybe have a sub on after 20 minutes. But if someone, you know, say, for example, someone just goes up and forearm smashes someone in the head, well, that's what happens. You play on 14 men then because your player's a dick. Now he's in the showers and you have to suffer the consequences. But like I say, in this period where we're getting all the accidental high shots, then I can kind of see it, but I wouldn't want it permanently.
But I think that's the point, though, isn't it? Is like you go through a period of there being a lot of red cards and you come out the other side where players don't do those things anymore. Like you say, you very rarely get a red card for a challenge in the air, whereas we had a spate of it. Yeah. 6 or 7 years ago, and that's kind of what you want to get to now, where you have a spate of red cards for shoulders to the head, which forces teams to coach differently, and as a result, the players end up changing their behaviour. So, yeah. I don't really see the point on that one, and yeah, I'm not sure about captain's challenge either. To be honest, I'm like, I know what you said. Like, I would have loved there to have been one in that France game because not Alain Penaud. I'm doing a Damien Penaud, I've caught your tendency there, Murph. But yeah, I've still not seen a proper replay of that. But Damien Penaud caught a big forearm to Alan Wynne-Jones's face. That's one where I would have liked to have seen that gone upstairs. So maybe, but yeah, it'd be interesting. We didn't see a lot of these variations over the weekend, so I suppose we'll wait and see.
No, we didn't.
Right, I know Murph is desperate to talk about the Lions, so we're going to take a very quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to get his thoughts on the performances of the likes of Dan Biggar. We're going to see who might slot into George North's Lions place if he's not fit. I'm going to do a quick bit of praising the Lord for the thought that Josh Navidi is going to be fit for the Lions, which gets me very excited. And yeah, we'll be discussing all the other bits and pieces from the world of Welsh rugby. All of that coming up very, very soon. Right, second half of the show, boys. Time to talk about the Lions. Where do you want to start, Murph? You've been our eye on the Guinness, not the Guinness Premiership. Bloody hell, jeez.
Gallagher
Premiership. It wouldn't be so embarrassing if it wasn't my day job to know these kind of things. Do you want to start with Dan Biggar? Because it's made kind of a lot of headlines, his performance, for a number of different reasons. Is he in that pole position for the number 10 for the Lions?
Other pundits on BT Sport had expressed the opinion last week that he was in pole position just because various factors, the way he's playing, obviously is the primary one, but you know, the fact that Johnny Sexton is possibly too far over 30 and different aspects like a loss of form amongst English tens and what have you. So, and then he, you know, on top of that, he played really well yesterday and then came on and soldiered on with an injury and made a try-saving tackle, possibly a try-saving tackle and different things like that. So he's in the headlines. But, you know, also yesterday, Marcus Smith had a blinder. And then I think you, Dan, saw Andy Powell was mentioning that should be on the tour. But and that's fine. I've championed Marcus Smith before. I just cannot believe he's not in the English squad. Same with Sam Simmons. It's just ridiculous they're not in the English squad. The only thing that's getting up my nose at the moment, because obviously people have said the same thing about Joe Simmons. Commentators on BT Sport have said about Joe Simmons' form merits being looked at for the Lions, so in my view, which is fine. And it's fine for Marcus Smith. I prefer him myself to Joe. But what they don't do, those people, like Andy Powell, who I'm a massive fan of, and not just because of golf buggies. I can tell you a story about him at my rugby club, actually. But what they don't do when people say things like that is say which of the incumbents they would drop for that person to go in. If you're going to pick Marcus Smith, you're either dropping Biggar, Farrell, Sexton, or Finn Russell, or something like that. You can say these names till you're blue in the face, but until you work out on paper who you're going to let down for someone who's never even played an international match, then it's just guff, really. I mean, Joe Simmons, I think, has had a game for England, hasn't he? Like a World Cup warm-up or some nonsense.
Something like that, yeah.
And he's played in you know, when his defence has played in European Cup finals very successfully, whereas Marcus hasn't, one of you. But which proven top-quality international outside half are you going to leave out for these guys who've had a good game last Saturday? That's always my argument with that.
I think you're spot on there, Murph. And the other thing is, like we said when we selected our squads, and if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, go back and they're still there. You know, get a chance to, if you do get a chance to listen to those. But like we said, if you look back at Gatland's previous two tours, he's only taken two out-and-out tens. And with that in mind, it's not like, you know, it's not like you're going to have four outside half options and then you're going to, there's going to be a, you know, a wild card like a Simmons or a Smith. And again, they're both fine players, but it's too late for them because we know Gatland likes players who've performed at the highest level. And you're right, European Cup final is big. You know, it's definitely big, but there's not having test match rugby is quite a prohibitive factor, especially when you've got people with bags of experience in front of you.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I think I said this last week, if you're going to pick a bolter of an English outside half, quite a lot of those people would also think that Owen Farrell's going to go as well as the 10-12 slot. So in a season, like, and I know I'm repeating myself, but I think the point is worth dragging out and making again, is that in a season when English outside half play has been absolutely, not necessarily their fault, that the way the whole team played has meant that English outside half play has been absolutely shite, you're going to take two English outside halves on the Lions tour. Mm. You know, and who like I say, who are you going to drop instead in to bring those guys in? So I just think, you know, and I do it as well, but people get carried away on the build-up to a Lions tour.
Yeah.
Every time someone has a good game, or if they're a favourite player, like Marcus Smith is a favourite player of mine, ooh, he should be in. But, you know, realistically, you can't. I mean, you just can't.
Absolutely. And I think there's some things, you know, like you could argue that in that nine slot, which is a bit troublesome, you know, it's that if there was someone who went on an outrageous run of form, that they might sneak in despite not being in their international side, something like that. But at 10, like you say, there's so many proven internationals there already that I just don't see it happening. So yeah,
it's got to be.
Luckily we've got a proven 10 in our ranks. So I was going to throw it over to you there, mate.
Lots of international experience, big games, European games, you name it. So I think it's about time I come in on this, isn't it? But I think the most frustrating thing for me is that Eddie Jones hasn't given any of those players the chance. So, like Murph said, they can play as well as, you know, they can have blinders. And, yeah, Marcus Smith, he had a great game. He's been great all season, isn't he, really? But unless he's playing international rugby, he's not gonna get a chance for the Lions. It just isn't. And
yeah.
It's so frustrating. I think for everyone, you know, if Eddie Jones keeps playing, you know, picking these players that shouldn't be there, then, you know, how frightening would it be if he started picking the players that deserve a crack, you know? I mean,
without going down too much of a wormhole into Eddie Jones's selection dilemmas, that's the thing that I find, you know, so baffling about it is that he has hinged all his hopes on those Saracens players recovering form because they're the spine of his team and he's built his team around them for the last however many years. But it's not like he hasn't got options. You know, that's the thing. He's got
too many options.
Outstanding options, and he's not looking at any of them, which, you know, is obviously, I think, as a result, they've suffered. But yeah, just to finish on that kind of, you know, inverted commas, bolter status, the difference with, I think, you know, Sam Simmons, who we were championing, is I do think that despite there being, you know, a wealth of fantastic back row forwards, I do think that there is an option for an eight. You know, I think Toby's got his spot nailed down, but because of the form of Vunipola, because we're not sure whether Stander is has necessarily got, you know, perhaps the appetite to go for a big test series, that there is the opportunity for that almost like wild card spot there. There just isn't at 10, and particularly where it's like, yeah, in a test match series, that's almost the most important position on the field, isn't it? So yeah, don't see it happening there. Let's take a look at the centres though, because we're going to have to, I think, if that North injury is as bad as it looks. Who do you think is the realistic replacement there, Dan? Anyone that you think will step up? Is Manu going to be fit?
Well, I think, I mean, if we look at our side, we didn't pick Jonathan, did we?
We didn't.
So I think, you know, from our side, I think, you know, with North out, Jonathan's in.
That's a big bank on returning to previous form, which, like we've said before, he did that 4 years ago and was player of the series. But he didn't look good again today. It's a big ask.
Was he at 12 today?
He was at 12 today, yeah.
He's at 12, yeah. So I think, you know, he's there or thereabouts. We didn't pick Ringrose, did we?
There's options, which it makes it so, George's injury makes it so much more complicated, I think, yeah, for the selection. But I imagine, you know, we're talking about the Cummins and Govins and who might burst onto the tour. Quite a few of the more sensible pundits say that they dinked a lot of them in ages ago, you know. Probably would have had an idea of who was definitely going at the start of the Six Nations and filled in the gaps during the Six Nations. He was watching Exeter and whoever Exeter were playing yesterday. Bloody hell.
I watched. They played Bristol on Friday, didn't they?
Friday, yeah. He was at that game. And Sam Simmons had a good game. So, I mean, you know, maybe he's looking at a couple more spaces that he's got open. But generally speaking, they've got usually a fair idea of everyone's going, and then standby players they would also be looking at. And I would imagine he had an idea of, I mean, this is guessing, but he had an idea of who he wanted and then who would be called up in an event of injury. And you've mentioned in the past, Chris Harris, Jed.
Yeah.
Players like that, they're all going to be on, and Ringrose, yeah, they're all going to be on the list.
Yeah, Harris is a good shout.
Yeah, so, and obviously he probably knows exactly when Tuilagi is going to be fit and whether it's early enough. So, yeah, it makes George's injury, and I the more we talk about it, the more convinced I am that he will make the tour, even though we don't, you know, a scan tomorrow could come back quite good. I don't know, but it's a really tricky one to fill, because obviously, like we said, he's got the covering wing as well. So, I think he might even have to start looking at outside centres playing now, unless he's already made his mind up. But it's not obvious. The replacement is not obvious.
Yeah, it's you're right. It's kind of blown it. It's blown it wide open, I think. And yeah, I mean, the main thing is, well, not the main thing, sorry, but it's easy to think, you know, when we start debating who the replacement should be, you forget what a crushing blow this would be for George North personally if he misses out. Yeah. I think particularly because he's worked so hard to get back to, you know, he went 4 years ago as a winger. He didn't look himself. He never looked like he was going to get a sniff of the test team. And he's, you know, he's kind of really rebuilt his form, and then to come back and, you know, play a new position and really take to it. You know, I know he played there before, but, you know, to really nail down that 13 spot, it's a real blow, because I was absolutely convinced he would have been on that plane.
I think a lot of the back play as well, Jed, would have been built around him as well, on the ball or off the ball. It's like, Murph, I think what you're saying there is if he isn't going, which it looks like he isn't, it is a massive, massive blow to the sort of systems and way in which that back line would probably function. It's huge, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. I mean,
it really is.
It's the kind of one that you need a fully firing Tuilagi to fill.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, and I really like Chris Harris, and I think that if he comes into that side, he would do a really solid job. But it wouldn't be a flashy, you know, It's all about brilliant defensive, you know, defensive organisation, which there's a lot to be said for. But in terms of having an X factor centre, Tuilagi and North are the ones that really do it. I think.
Yeah, but I mean, as it stands, Henry, if we're assuming, because we're completely biased and also probably factual, that North would have been in the Test 13 slot, whatever happens in selection now, is probably Henry Slade in pole position.
Probably.
I don't think he's playing his best rugby at the moment, but quite often, you know, people have average seasons, like we've just mentioned with Jonathan Davis, and then they're interstellar when they get on tour. So he's got the ability to do that. So why wouldn't he do that? But he's not playing. He's not having his best season, I don't think. He carried injuries, I think, into a couple of the Six Nations games as well. But yeah, he'd be pole position number 13 just because the pecking order that was already in place. So I'm really sorry for him because it would have been George's third tour. He's just done his 100th international cap, and yeah, really sad.
It is. I think with Slade, it's a great point there, Murph, because I think at the moment, I might be wrong on this, but I think two of the test matches are at altitude, I think. And what that means, obviously, you know, is someone like Slade and his boot gives you another option to get out of trouble, to play that kicking game, to kick really long and hard and try and pin South Africa back. And, you know, that kicking game becomes absolutely vital. And that's where, you know, I think someone like him does. Maybe that was the game plan that was there all along, but I think that certainly has an effect.
Yeah,
sad stuff. Right, on a brighter note though, Josh Navidi looks as though he is going to be fit. How big a boost is that, Dan?
Oh, it's huge, isn't it? Yeah, Navidi. We're all such big fans, aren't we, of his? And I think, you know, he's got a lot of fans now in, you know, all over the, you know, Ireland, Scotland, England, isn't he? There's, you know, everyone rates him now. So yeah, it's big. You know, it's good news. Personally, I think it's fantastic for him as well, isn't it? He, I fully expect him to get the, you know, to get the call up. Just really hope that he does now.
I do. I think that versatility just, you know, will keep him. It keeps him in really, really good stead. Not just in terms of like filling in midweek, you know, going, all right, you can do a job for us at eight in one of the midweekers. I just think it gives you so many options in that back row that you can have someone at six or seven, not less likely at eight for the tests, but someone who can turn ball over, who can carry for you, tackles like a bastard. He's got, you know, so, so strong. I think he's, if he goes, he will be damn close to that test side if he's not in it. You know, he'd be in my side anyway.
Well, we haven't really seen him not get, like when he's in and around the Welsh camp, we haven't seen him not get selected in a position. So I honestly think that if he's in the squad, which we all think he is, and I, you know, he's got to be, he should be. You wouldn't back against him not to be in the starting 15, would you? Which would be quite fascinating. And Murph, over to you for the say so. And I think
there was I don't know if you saw it going on Twitter. There's a clip of him being interviewed by Sam Warburton in my clubhouse, my rugby club.
I've not seen.
I missed that.
I think I retweeted it, or maybe I just shared it with all my friends. Anyway, it was quite nice because they caught the club on a good day. He looked really smart. I'm not so sure, actually. I'm sure that he's merits a place, but I'm not so sure if all other parts of the country appreciate how good Josh is. It's a position blindside where everyone's got their favourite. Like Peter O'Mahony would have a big following in Ireland,
yeah.
and Richie and Tom Curry. You know, you kind of get in the past. There would have been Dan Lydiard here. You kind of get attached to the dog age type of players like that. But I do think people who play against Josh Navidi know how good he is. Yeah. That's an important distinction because Billy knows he's been bottled up by him loads of times. And I think other blind sides know what it's like, and front five forwards know what it's like when you run into Josh. So I think he's the best blind side in the country, but it wouldn't surprise me if Tom Curry took the blind side as well.
Really? See, the more I think about it, the more I now see Tadhg Burn playing at six in a test side. This is based on Gatland's thinking, not ours. I could see Burn playing at six. I could see Navidi playing at seven.
Well, likewise, I could see Tom Curry tripping into that as well.
And I could see that happening. And look, they're both quality players. Falata at eight. And I think this is probably like the biggest point for me. Is like now we get really close to the Lions. Like silly season really does begin on Twitter. It's like, do you know what? They're all bloody brilliant players. Like if you go on this tour, whoever gets selected, you know, all those names we reeled off, yes, you'll have your favourites. Yes, you'll have an opinion on who should and shouldn't go. But none of them are going to be players who aren't good enough to go on that tour. Not one of them will not be good enough to go on the tour. They all will be.
Well, yeah, certainly in the back row. Yeah, the back row.
Anywhere. They'll all be Lions quality players because the strength of players to pick from is so high now.
And it's always worth remembering, as you get older, everyone does it every 4 years, talks blue in the face about who should be on the plane and who should be in their test lineup. When it comes to the actual event, it is usually whoever's fit, having made the plane, and whoever's in the best, if everyone is fit in a particular position, whoever's played best on that tour. So that's... Mm. There's only eight matches this time around. Sometimes you only get three chances to earn your place on the test team whilst you're on the tour. So, you know, like the one that I always think back to, which grinds my gears, is 2009, Hugo Monier getting the nod ahead of Shane Williams, which was based on and justified on tour form. Shane Williams just wasn't playing very well.
They gave Shane every chance to find a bit of his old form. Yeah. He was just in a rut, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was like a hangover from being World Player of the Year. Yeah. A little bit like Johnny Sexton had, yeah, World Player of the Year, and then the following season, Duff. And that's what happened to Shane as well. But I still disagree with it, even though on form it was right.
Yeah.
Because Shane would have finished those chances that Hugo buggered up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm only dwelling on it for 12 years now. So, but things like that, that is how whatever we pundits and, you know, even the journalists with decades of coverage all over the world, they talk about it a blue in the face, and then when the time comes, it's whoever haven't got, you know, an injury ends up in the 23 on the day. So,
do you know what? I think form plays less of a part this time around, like as in on tour form this time,
because
like you said, there's only eight matches.
There's
only eight matches. And the other thing I think is that if Warren Gatland had selected that side in 2009, rather, I know he obviously was on the tour as a coach, but ultimately, you know, McGeechan had the final say. So I think if Gatland had selected that side, he probably would have selected Shane Williams, because I think he holds that big match experience in a lot higher regard than perhaps Geach, who would have been more of a traditionalist of everyone on this tour has a chance to fight their way into the test side, which is what we all love that stuff about the Lions. But, you know, I suppose it's probably a bit less valid now than it was in 97 and certainly in 2009.
Yeah, Jed, because of the versatility of Navidi and Burn, bench positions for those two, because you think of, depending on how the game's going, Navidi, obviously having Navidi on the bench, you're not going to want him coming on, and he can take us in couple of different directions, can't he? The same with Burn then as well. It's got like the bench for the Lions is going to be phenomenal, isn't it?
And it is.
It's almost more fascinating than the actual starting side, really.
But like, go on, Murph.
I was just going to say that the 6-2 split, 5-3 split is another thing, whether they're going to follow the Africans in that. There's all sorts of permutations. And there's permutations, excuse me, I promise that's not COVID. I've had my jab.
That cream egg.
Yeah.
More likely.
I haven't had one today. I'm trying to grow up. There's massive permutations in the South African side. Not only have they not played, but like RG Snyman is injured.
Yeah.
Luke de Jager is injured. So that leaves, from the World Cup winning side, that leaves Eben Etzebeth, Franco Mostert, who I can remember the name of the other week, and then they got to find Tua. I mean, obviously they got him. Don't get me wrong, they got good second rows. But who are they going to be, and will they then, if they haven't got RG Simon, Franco Mostert to come on, will they go with a 5-3 split, a regular 5-3 split? So there's a lot of kind of chess and second guessing to go on actually once the tour starts.
Well, this Rainbow Cup thing is no good for them either as well, this disruption that it's caused, because again, I think they would have been, you know, it was certainly an opportunity to get some of their key players into some form. I mean, maybe even some of the squad positions up for grabs as well. So, I know they are set to play the games, but it's, you know, it hasn't happened yet, has it? They didn't have any games this weekend, so it'd be interesting to see if that does happen the way things have changed so quickly. But yeah, so it's a fascinating point because, you wouldn't bank against South Africa unearthing two untried second rows who are both 6'10" and 22 stone. And they're instantly world class. You know, that's the kind of way that they churn them out. But
I think there'll be some call ups from the English Premiership as well.
Yeah,
because they're the only players they can know we're in for. I there's so many in the English Premiership now, and even around the Pro 14 and Top 14, that there's bound to be some call ups anyway. But I think based on the fact that they're the ones who are actually getting week by week games, there'd be quite a few called up, I would imagine, which could be awkward if I don't know which teams, but could theoretically be in the Gallagher Premiership playoff final, and the South African national team waiting for them to come down and play the tour. So
clear up, I guess.
No, the lay of the land to,
yeah,
something like that. Some platitude I normally throw in the end of a sentence when it's your turn to talk. Insert that there.
I'll dig through some old episodes. I'll get the Murph soundboard. I'll get the Murph soundboard out.
Yeah, I lost it there. Trouble is, I haven't any brandy today.
That is the trouble. I'm just going to fill that space with you saying Tommy Price on repeat.
Yeah. And, what was the one I did the other way? Oh, Elliot D instead of Elliot Daly. Kept me awake.
I wouldn't worry about it, Murphy. I think it all adds to the charm. Again, obviously, we're going to return to the Lions across the course of the next few weeks. But yeah, that'll probably wrap it up on that for this front. Something I did want to touch on, I mentioned it very quickly in the introduction to last week's show. Obviously, we pre-recorded the show that went out last week, and in the in-between time, the sad passing of John Dawes, who, bear in mind, we spent a lot of this episode talking about Lions centres, and, you know, had a massive impact. And I was keen to turn to you on this one, Dan, as someone heavily involved at London Welsh, a man who made a massive impact there at the Welsh national setup, and of course for the Lions as well.
Yeah, huge impact. At London Welsh, I know, you know, London Welsh are deeply saddened by the loss of John Dawes, and I know his grandson Roger plays for the club as well, and yeah, just a huge association, isn't there? So yeah, it's a very sad day, isn't it? And a lovely bloke, and top player, top coach, what you struggle to think of anyone that had a bigger impact on the game, really, don't you?
I mean, the coaching thing is fascinating, and it was only a few years ago when I read a couple of books that, you know, I think you started to realise the impacts that his coaching had, and kind of going into it at such a young age. I think that also speaks volumes of what he must have been like as a leader and as a captain. But I mean, that CV is spectacular, Murph, isn't it? When you look at being the only Lions captain to win in New Zealand, if nothing else, and then going on to mastermind Welsh victories in the, you know, in the six, well, the Five Nations as a coach.
Yeah. As a
coach.
I know it's the era thing that does it, but only 22 caps for Wales. Yeah. I mean, like Gareth Edwards only had 53, and he was in the side for 10 years, yeah. So or more. So it's just the way it was then. But bizarrely, and this will shock you, I was coached by John Dawes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was coach of Glamorgan Wanderers Rugby Football Club about 91, 92. And, I mean, in fairness, he wasn't very committed. But how would he be after he'd already coached the Lions and the international side? He wasn't very committed as a coach to us, and he didn't stay long. The only, I mean, lovely bloke, though. Everyone, you know, worshipped him at the club. But the only criticism I would have of the guy is he seemed to think I was quite good as a teenager. And I really proved him wrong over the next 10 years. So, yeah, but sad loss. I mean, not that old either. So quite a sad. Well, 80 years old, but, you know, by today's standards, it's not that old anymore. So, yeah, sad loss.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, you know, like I say, the impact that he's left across the Welsh game and of course the Lions is big. Right, what have we got coming up over the next few weeks to look forward to? Obviously, we'll have more Lions chats to come. We will also, of course, be keeping you up to date with the Rainbow Zippy Bungle and George Trophy, which feels more and more fitting that as these weeks go on, it descends into a bloody episode of Rainbow, doesn't it?
I didn't tell you my Andy Powell story.
Here's one to finish on.
It's nothing that's going to make the papers or you know, incur the wrath of his lawyers or anything. It's a very complimentary story.
No, well, let's hear it.
My club were playing a playoff against his club, Brecon. He's just finished at Brecon, hasn't he? He's gone somewhere else. In a championship playoff final, so for promotion to the championship, because we'd won Division One East, and Brecon had won the Cup and Division One West. And we went up there, lost by 5 points, I think. Came down, or seven maybe, came down here to Cardiff for the second leg and beat them convincingly. But towards the end of the game, there was, I don't know how else to say it, a massive fight broke out on the terrace. It was like a lot of kind of Brecon farmer boy types who'd been on it all day stood next to a load of Ely boys who... We'll just wind you up and not take a backward step the whole time. And in the end, with about 5-10 minutes to go, huge kind of football terrace type fight broke out in the stands. And a lot of older blokes piled in to break it up, but you could see it wasn't over. So the game carried on. The ref didn't, like, it was like 1980s football. And never happened at our club before or since in all of our history. I might think it's important to point out. And I was shocked. It took the shine off the whole thing because we just got promoted and I couldn't enjoy it. But anyway, the ref carried on playing and it looked like it was going to break out again. So Andy Powell just walked from the dugout more than halfway across the pitch, spoke to the ref, and the ref blew up. Now, I don't know. I wasn't next to him, so I can't. But I can only assume Andy Powell went, "Ref, I think you should blow up, this game's over." And that was it. And he saved a lot of aggro by just conceding the game, basically. And so, you know, obviously I was already a fan, but after that, I got a lot of time for him.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot, mate. Good, nice story to finish on. Right, thank you, Murph.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Dan. I think Dan.
I'm glad they finished the sentence in that one. Anyway,
I think Dan
is the better way to end the night.
Dan needs to go and stick 50 pence in the meter, judging by how dark it's gone on his on his end of the Zoom. It's like an episode of what was that bloody thing? Like most haunted with Derek Acora.
Hang on, I'm getting the stage set for
a little bit Blair Witch as well.
Oh, Blair Witch, bloody hell. I'm getting the stage set for
if you stand in the corner now, I'm gonna wet my knickers.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, thanks to you, Dan. I'll let you go. And oh god, look at that, the backlighting just like making his face look even more sinister.
It's terrifying. Yeah,
it is terrifying. Thanks to Dan, thanks to Murph, thanks to everyone who listened. If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, that helps us out massively. And we did have one of these which I forgot to mention. Thank you to Welsh Italian. I'm guessing that's Joe Calzaghe. I'm sure he's a listener. Personally, best rugby pod out there. Thank you very much for that review. If you want to do the same, you can do that on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And finally, a thanks as always to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. We'll be back next week to chat rugby with you. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.